out across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, guys, you know, if you're having your brain eaten by aliens off of Hulu, you're very familiar with the question, which ad experience do you prefer? And it really is an example of the state of our life on planet Earth. Which ad experience do you prefer? It's a neuro-linguistic mind meld that tells you that you don't have the answer that you would prefer. Obviously, you're not given the choice. We're living in a world of acts of prestidigitation, a time where stage magic is taking over in our mainstream media like some David Copperfield event, and we are witnessing the fact that we can no longer believe our own senses. Now, I once saw David Copperfield on stage, and it was an amazing pleasure. Now, I would swear to you up and down that David Copperfield can fly. But of course, my logical brain says, well, obviously not. And when I look at this puzzle of David Copperfield on stage, I quickly wonder, are they testing technologies in front of the public in such a performance? So is he wearing an anti-gravity belt and just floating around? Because I'll tell you guys, he flew beyond wires. There was no wires. There was something that kept him afloat. And what was a real mystery was that during his performance, he turned into a child and made it snow inside of the amphitheater. Now, this wouldn't be too bizarre. There could be people with snow guns out there making it snow. But we were in the middle of summer in Kansas, and believe me, it's hot. And we walked out to snow-covered cars. Now, I can only trust my memory on this, but I know this happened. On the other hand, I have a friend who said, no, I worked with David Copperfield. I worked those snow generation devices, and there's no way that snow was outside. We were blowing it in the amphitheater, and you're incorrect. So is my memory faulty, or is the understanding of what happened faulty? Who knows what's going on in a compartmentalized world? So when we start to look at the puzzles that we have now and we start to begin to delve into things that are almost two decades old, we have a new playing field because now we live in the day and age of databasing, and information doesn't just come and go as it did in our recent past. I mean, in my past, it was on television and then it wasn't. There was nothing else to review. But then the World Wide Web came out. Now realize in 2001, we were still dealing with VHS. And there really wasn't any consumer editing software to deal with. And the World Wide Web did not exist as it does now. Certainly there was no YouTube. Now, we can continually analyze evidence and look at the puzzle pieces over and over again. Analyzed by a multitude of people, we've reached the point of a type 1 civilization that allows with global communications, we can now ask almost anyone what they think about this situation and show them the evidence. This is the amazing new world that we're moving into, and the amazing world that we are going to talk to tonight with James Perloff from jamesperloff.com. And I want to welcome you to the show, James. It's always amazing and wonderful to talk with you and to dig deeper into which ad preference we prefer, which ad experience we prefer. Do we want A or B, James? Or is there this elusive C answer that just isn't ever offered to us to the questions that are posed on why we have to deal with such an imposing authority and why we don't ever think that authority is out for our best interest? So welcome to the show, James.
Thanks. Well, experience has certainly taught us that the powers that be, that authority, is certainly not working in our best interest. And you're right. They've been pushing a lot of A-B paradigms on us. Left versus right, for example, is a classic one. But as we in alt media have been continually discovering, there are often our C, D's, E's, and F's out there as well in terms of our ad preferences.
Absolutely. And then we get into battles over whether we think it was D, E, or F. You know what
I mean?
It just never ends. Well, I wanted to take you first before we get into this discussion. And folks, you want to follow James Perloff on jamesperloff.com. And you can go over there now and pull up the article as we're going to start to discuss it. But before I do this, James, I want to run you through the Twitter feed. And folks, if you want to follow on Twitter, of course, it is at FreemanTV. And I highly recommend it. I don't Twitter for pleasure, you know. I Twitter for your benefit so that you can see the news that I think is absolutely critical and important to the 21st century. And as strange as it seems to me, the news that I'm reporting now is news that I reported 3 years ago. And yet it still hasn't really hit anybody's full attention yet as to where the world is going. So, James, I'm going to throw a few news stories at you, and you can respond if you like. And if not, just revel in the mystery that is the 21st century. Now, I have said that 2018 is going to be the year of augmented reality. And it is coming, folks, with fire. And it is going to change a way so many things are done. Augmented reality is a pair of glasses that you would put on, like HoloLens or Magic Leap. And you put these glasses on, and then, much like the Pokemon Go, you've got an augmented reality going on in front of you, showing you highlights, giving you, people's referrals and all of that as you walk down the street through your augmented glasses. And of course, in the latest news, they're using this for quality control and using ensuring the best product using HoloLens is their latest ad. But meanwhile, while we're sitting here, James, in an idea of augmented reality, okay, because we're going to be talking about how reality has been manufactured much and some of the technologies that could be used, you know, holograms, anti-gravity, all of the strangeness. And here comes Vladimir Putin saying that whoever leads in artificial intelligence will rule the world. So now I just envision, James, all these people running around in their HoloLens or Magic Leap glasses while this AI is programming preference A or preference B, and everybody's just being offered the authorized options in our reality. What do you think about all this AI and augmented reality? Do you have thoughts on that, James?
Well, there's no question that they're going to... Well, we've always had a false reality coming out of the news media that's been going on for a long time. I guess you might call that sort of a primitive form of artificial intelligence, the false flags, the deceptions, the images of our enemies as brutes who must be killed going back more than a century. But now, of course, technology has advanced to the point that you mentioned holograms, and I was just watching somebody tweeted this out the other day that in China, they made it appear that a giant was walking across a harbor, and it was a hologram of a giant. But as he walked, he splashed because they obviously had some mechanism to create the splashes. But it's clear we're entering into an era when there may be truly a frightening dimension to the artificial realities that are created. And, you know, I hearken back actually to Serge Monast, you know, M-O-N-A-S-T. He was a Canadian journalist who said in 1994 that NASA was developing this project called Artificial Blue Beam. Project Blue Beam. And he said that one of the dimensions of that was going to be mind control through microwaves. Well, now we see that we've got this you mentioned 2018, where we're starting to build this 5G network. And I understand that 5G, the waves are going to be 25 times stronger than Wi-Fi. And there is definitely a concern that these waves may start to be used for mind control purposes because Manas said back in 94 that the military had already figured out the frequency of the human brain and that they could actually transmit messages and make you think you were hearing voices. And I think that some of the people who claim they've heard voices have actually been hearing them as test subjects, but this could be done on a massive scale in the relatively near future. So I'm not I'm not as familiar with artificial intelligence as you are, but I have no doubt that it is an unreality that's going to become a reality.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we just can no longer believe our senses. And the point of the singularity, the idea of this AI once it comes online, is that at that moment, at that very nanosecond, everything changes, folks. Everything. There is no going back because AI will take over on its own. As Facebook learned, it could start to manage its own language, its own encryption that no one can deal with. And, you know, once it's happened, folks. And that's so on top of that, Thursday, they launched the X-37B atop the SpaceX Falcon rocket. And the X-37B, folks, is a robotic space plane, okay? There's no pilot. It's about the size of a small pickup truck, and it orbits our planet for years. This is the fifth launch of the X-37B and the first launch by SpaceX because, as we reported many years ago when Obama was taking down NASA and starting the Ares space program, Ares, of course, being the god of war, we are moving into the space war era. And the X-37B is not going to be the only telepresence robotic space plane out there. There are others called Dream Chaser, another launch coming up for that. But so I just wanted everybody to be aware that Thursday, the X-37B launched into the atmosphere, into the orbit the planet again. And no one knows what this DARPA vehicle is doing. It is a military project. We know it's up there. We know it's orbiting. But what it's doing, no one knows. So, you know, the time of robotics, you know, we have Robonaut on the International Space Station, a telepresence robot that can go around and do things on the space station while somebody's controlling it through basically their mind. And on top of that, we have robotic space planes orbiting the planet. And of course, the space war is really what is going to set off the Russia-China alliance once all of this starts pouring out. So, you know, this is just a minor state of where we're at, right? Just a couple of articles: augmented reality, the takeover of AI to rule the world, and then robotic space planes orbiting our planet. These are the levels and layers of technologies that we can see right in front of our face that are coming towards us. Now, back in the days of 2001, 9/11, I mean, we were recording that stuff on VHS tapes. And I mean, my first television shows were done with editing VHS tapes. Now we're in this new era where we can really just start to dig deep into the story. And on top of that, being globally communicative, we can now ask people in the know. I mean, haven't you ever wanted to just go ask a chemtrail pilot, you know, well, what's going on? You know, but I don't think they exist, James. Like, I think if there had been a chemtrail pilot out there, we would have known about it by now. Certainly, there's got to be something else to that, you know.
Well, do you think that those planes are drones that are laying out the chemtrails?
That is definitely one of, I mean, if we got robotic space planes orbiting, why not drone aircraft? And we know that exists. And the flights that we see forming the grids do not seem to follow known flight patterns of commercial aviation. And they run in these grids, which is really bizarre. And yeah, the fact that there was never a chemtrail pilot to come forward makes it seem like they are alternate airplanes, not the commercial airplanes. And the timing of it puts them over America around the same time that NATO was given free license to fly our skies. So the fact that it could be an outside organization could also keep this from getting to our knowledge, right?
Right. Yeah, I heard some people theorize that the pilots were just being paid these incredible salaries, or another opinion I heard from a military man was that these are military guys and they just take their orders. And, you know, quite often men of in uniform have done tasks that were against their better judgment because they felt, well, I've got to follow orders. And that was another explanation. But the idea that they might have a drone do it, because a drone has no conscience and the drone is not particularly concerned about the quality of water that it's going to drink.
Right. Right, exactly. And meanwhile, we have colossal asteroids just barely missing the planet last week, and the dramatic potential of Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma and the technologies that we know exist there to steer weather. And no one's sitting there thinking, well, don't worry, the government will just use their ionospheric heater and steer Harvey or Irma away. Well, no, we all sit here and go, well, obviously they're going to point it right at the, you know, the Gulf. They're going to point it right at this section. No one ever thinks that authority's out there to help us, you know.
And their track record proves that they have not, between the taxation, the surveillance, the police state, the unnecessary wars, the vaccines and letting vaccine manufacturers off the hook. There are just so many countless examples of the you know, debauching the dollar through the Federal Reserve, stealing money. You know, Catherine Austin Fitz says there's $55,000 missing for every man, woman, and child in America from HUD and the DOD right now. They can't account for it. The people in the government, you know, at the low level, I think we're talking about good people, but at the upper levels of government, they obviously, by their own history, do not have our best interests at heart. And I think that's clear to 98% of the people in alt media.
Yes. So let's dig in. Let's dig in, James. And because we can now analyze all the video footage, and we can analyze and even do what you did, which is amazing, and contact people in the know. Professional people that might know something about flying airplanes into buildings and whether or not it's possible. Let's start with a quick overview of what we talked about last time so that we can understand the players involved in this.
Okay. Yeah, our previous show was called 9/11, The Israel Connection. And that was just about a month ago. And that was based on a post that I wrote called 9/11 Simplified. But subsequent to that, I received emails from six different pilots, none of whom accepted the 9/11 official story. Two were scheduled to fly in Boeings on the morning of 9/11. But I got a particularly interesting email from an active A300. That's an Airbus pilot. He flies them now for a major airline. And he had terrific insights into flying. And so I started asking him questions, you know, not intending to write anything about it, but he had so many great answers. And I started putting more and more questions about 9/11 to him. And was this possible? Was that possible? And this guy used to train pilots for the airlines, and his knowledge of the dynamics of flying was so great. Eventually, I realized this would make a good follow-up post. And so the new one is called Conversations with an Airline Pilot About 9/11. And I put my remarks in bold and his in regular font just so people could tell us apart more easily, to make it more easily readable. But he had such a great writing style, I really didn't have to edit anything he said except to throw an occasional comma in there. This was a follow-up to the earlier article as well as the interview you and I did that came out of that. So I just want to recap a couple of things. A couple of segments from those shows and that article, because what I said to this pilot and what he said to me integrate with that so much. So we talked about four things in the previous show and article, and we talked about, number one, who is the basic who of 9/11 in terms of perpetrating it. And then we talked about three elements: what brought down the Twin Towers, what struck the towers initially, and what was the fate of the original planes and passengers. And I just want to quickly recap the first two. As far as the who goes, there's no question about the fact that high-level members of our government were involved, who were interested in initiating the police state or furthering the police state in America. But I think that what I mentioned was that we have I believe it's a misleading phrase when we say 9/11 was an inside job. I believe that 9/11 was really an outside job. On the operational level, I believe it was Israelis, but done with the cooperation and consent of people at the highest levels of our own government. And as far as the evidence that Israel was behind it, I would recommend people either check my original article, 9/11 Simplified, or the best really is the WikiSpooks post called 9/11 Israel Did It. But we went over things like the dancing Israelis and Michael Chertoff, who was in charge of the 9/11 investigation, and he, of course, his mother was a Mossad agent. So no big surprise he sent all the arrested Israelis back to Israel. It was Lucky Larry Silverstein, who was best friends with Benjamin Netanyahu, who had taken over ownership of the World Trade Center with his $5 billion insurance payout. He became owner just less than 2 months before the incident. And of course, airport and World Trade Center security being Zionist hands, specifically with the airports in Israeli hands, and all the companies like Odigo, PTEC, Zim Navigational, Philip Zelikow, dual Israeli citizen, being head of the 9/11 Commission, PNAC, you know, with Wolfowitz and Zakheim. But my favorite one, he ties into to tonight's conversation, is really Danny Lewin, who was a former member of the Sayeret Matkal, which is Israeli special ops, and I believe they had a huge role in 9/11. But what you need to know about Danny is that prior to 9/11, he had an official portrait taken in front of two panels that looked just like the Twin Towers. And his thumb is pointing to his watch. If you blow up that watch, it's a Swatch Hijacker model watch. And the hour hand, minute hand, second hand, and the date are all set to the 11. And the odds against that happening by chance are over 20,000 to 1. And where was Danny Lewin on 9/11? He was on Flight 11 in row 9. Row 9 of Flight 11 on 9/11. He's got his big smirking face there. And I believe he was a big part of this operation. But again, I would go to those sources I mentioned before. But the other thing to mention, too, just in terms of Israel, is whenever you're solving a crime, you know, a big question is who benefits. You know, America did not benefit from 9/11. Muslim countries in the Middle East have not benefited from 9/11. The only beneficiary is Israel with their Yinan plan and their Greater Israel plan. They've sat back and watched as America's bumped off their enemies one by one. So I'll stop there. That was kind of just a quick recap of what we discussed before in the WHO. But let me just pause here because you may have some things to add.
I absolutely do. And it was one of the most important points you made out there. And the idea, you know, and choosing ad experience A or B, 9/11 as an inside job became an instant meme. And it was instantly opposed by me because the whole concept here, folks, the reason that the American government would even be shown to be a part of this puzzle is for the rest of the stage act, because America needs to be brought before the world court. And so we have identified the villain as us. And we are doing everything. And when I say we, I mean the truth stream media that is trying to say it's an inside job. We're pulling the strings to say, bring America to the world court, which I believe was part of the plan. So every time we sit around saying that Bush and Cheney did it, we are putting our very nation in jeopardy, not looking at option C and realizing that we were meant to pick this ad preference.
You're right. And of course, Bush and Cheney certainly cooperated very much with the plan and you know, they advanced the whole NDAA authorization plan and advance the police state and further the New World Order. But as again, on an operational level, I really feel that this is primarily an attack on America. It's just that it wasn't by the people we were told. It was not the, you know, the cave-dwelling Muslim Arabs, as we were told. I wanted to just recap the other part that I was going to do quickly, which is how the towers came down, which isn't that relevant to the pilot conversation I had, but is there anything else you wanted to say about in regards to the WHO?
No, that was the most critical point I had, was to recognize the villain and realize your part in playing this stage performance. You know, when we're talking about prestidigitation, you got to realize that the audience is a participant in every major way. It wouldn't work. What good is magic without an audience, right? So, Go ahead.
Well, I think there's been a few of those prestidigitations, not only by NIST and the U.S. government, but occasionally have gone into the truth movement itself. And this pilot helped me to spot a couple of those. But the other thing I was just going to quickly recap from our previous show and from my article 9/11 Simplified was how the towers came down. And of course, we have three major theories, which are nano thermite, and directed energy, and I have friends in those fields, and I respect them. But I do believe it was a nuclear event, and I'm just going to – I gave my top 10 reasons in that article. I have an even longer article on it that preceded that. But my top 10 reasons for why the towers collapse was nuclear weapons, which I believe we're talking about two suitcase nukes that were stored at the deepest point of each tower. That was the elevator shaft of the service pits, I should say, under the elevator shaft of elevator 50, the only elevator that went around the full distance of either tower, right in the middle of the building. It was down in the bedrock where its sideways and downward force would be contained, causing it to shoot up. But the top 10 reasons are, number one, the type of cancer that first responders get more than any other compared to its expected rate is thyroid cancer, which is a signature of an atomic bomb, which gives off iodine-131, which embeds in your thyroid. Reason number two is all the nuclear fission elements, such as cadmium, thorium, uranium, which were found in the World Trade Center dust samples. Number three is all that molten steel, you know, that those fires burned for over 3 months at the World Trade Center. Extreme heat is another characteristic of a nuclear weapon. Number four was the explosion of these huge multi-ton fragments of the World Trade Center, which flew across the street and even embedded themselves in other buildings. You need extreme explosive force to do that. And I believe that the nuke, being the most powerful explosive known to man, is the answer. Number five is the complete vaporization of the contents of the Twin Towers. Which the, you know, a nuke doesn't just explode like a piece of dynamite. It's the explosion that keeps on giving. It keeps on exploding, and it has the power to vaporize. You know, there wasn't a single toilet that wasn't turned to dust in the World Trade Center. Number six was the seismograph readings at Columbia University's observatory at Palisades, New York, which showed that when the towers collapsed, for each tower collapse, quote-unquote, there was a gigantic off-the-charts seismographic spike, which would be consistent with an explosion, not a mere, you know, rubble collapse. Number seven was that, and this, I had help on this, by the way, I didn't come up with all these on my own, was the nuclear explosion in the basement explains all the damage to the rest of the World Trade Center. You know, building five was ablaze, building seven was ablaze, the building six was cratered out. Well, unknown to most people, the World Trade Center was interconnected underground by water drainage systems, a storm water drainage as well as a sewer system. And it was the explosion in the basements followed the path of least resistance up that elevator shaft and expanded out. You can see the flash of that nuclear explosion when the second tower, the North Tower, goes down. But the secondary force went through the underground system, and you can see geysers of smoke bursting out of the World Trade Center near the parking lot as the first tower collapses. But it was a secondary force of the nukes that kind of accounted for the high heat. You can also see it confirmed as people run away from the dust cloud. You can see smoke spewing out of the sewers of New York City. People don't pick up on this, but it's in the clip I have there in my post on 9/11 Simplified. You can see the smoke coming out of the sewers with the cloud still behind them. That's because the drainage system, water drainage system, the World Trade Center drained ultimately into New York City's sewers. Okay, reason number eight is that gigantic dust cloud. Now, when a building collapses, it'll create a dust cloud, but not like that one. But when a nuke goes off, and you just watch footage of a nuclear test by the U.S. military, you'll see not only does it create a mushroom cloud, but it creates an enormous expanding dust cloud. Reason number nine, Susan Lindauer, CIA asset, who was imprisoned for whistleblowing on 9/11 and is now out, has her own radio show. She said that in the CIA, they already knew that 9/11 was coming, and their information was specifically that the towers would be destroyed by a mini nuke. I consider that further affirmation. Finally, number 10, Benjamin Netanyahu wrote a book in 1995 called Fighting Terrorism, and he predicted that the next terrorist act would be a nuclear bomb in the basement of the World Trade Center. And 2 days after 9/11, he was bragging about making that, really toying with Tom Brokaw, bragging about how he predicted this nuclear bomb would be placed in the World Trade Center. And I've got the exact clip in those posts that people can watch. But those are my top 10 reasons why the collapse of the Twin Towers was two nuclear events.
Yes, yes. And I'm going right back to the the fertilizer bombs in Oklahoma City and the idea of how there's no way that that fertilizer bomb would have taken down the front half of that building. Mm-hmm. And it was often suggested that there was a pocket nuke in the Oklahoma City bombing as well.
Right. And yes, there were quite a few affirmations of unexploded bombs in those buildings as well. I'm not sure what the answer is to Oklahoma City. I've never written an article on it, but there's no question that it was far more than the fertilizer truck, and we're dealing far more, well, obviously, than the government's official story of the towers collapsing due to structural failure. All you have to do is look, especially not so much the South Tower, look at the North Tower. When it explodes, you will see this enormous explosion of flame engulf the building. And there's just no way that structural failure accounts for that.
Well, you know, you can imagine what would have happened if that we had had smartphones when JFK was shot. We would absolutely have so much more data. And in the same way, in 2001, we didn't have as much, but we can definitely analyze the news footage that we got. But this is why we have so few, data points to follow. We're still in 2001, and now we're at this point where we're at Google censorship, and anything that's derived as alternative facts are going to be ignored by Google searches, and I'm sure FreemanTV.com and JamesPerloff.com will fall into those categories. But so we can see that they learned a lot of lessons with 9/11 because they thought they were pulling off a perfect stage magician act. And of course, to do this, you got to keep it super simple. And we're going to talk about the simple ways that you can achieve a mission like this, but yet still using some of the new technologies to keep everybody in question. But you can see that if they're preparing for the next one, then they need us to not be able to share all this data and you know, coordinate our information and everything. So now we've got this Google censorship shutting down. I mean, my YouTube, they were like, so have you noticed that your money was low this month? I'm like, yeah. You cut about 2/3 of my money out of there. And they're like, well, that's because we've now done away with all of these videos. 87 of your videos are now considered improper. And so we can see where they're preparing. They learned their lessons from 9/11. We were like, hey, wait a minute, guys. Let's have a look at that plane going through that building and just think through that for a minute. And so obviously this new Google censorship and the censorship of YouTube and everything is to keep us from doing what we're going to do right now, James.
Right. They're attacking on all fronts, demonetizing the videos, taking down the videos, putting up false numbers on the number of views. Some people have even told me that the number of views on their video declined, which is absolutely impossible. And this all seemed to have started with Hillary's defeat, which I think they took as a victory of alt media over mainstream media. And they realized that we were winning the battle. And that's when they started this whole fake news meme and the Google censorship and YouTube censorship, and really cracking down. And it's a good sign in a way. It means that we have won on many fronts, and they're actually afraid, because if we weren't having an impact, they wouldn't be doing this.
Exactly. So let's do what they don't want us to do, James. Let's go ahead and dig in and start to tear apart some of this stage performance. Let's reveal the magician's secrets.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what hit the towers. And, when I first heard about no planes, you know, this is about 3 years back, no planes on 9/11, you know, I really just clucked my tongue and rolled my eyes and said, oh, come on, you know, you're going to discredit the entire 9/11 movement by talking about no planes, because everybody saw that second plane hitting the South Tower, and how can you deny that? But then I started looking at it, and I started looking at Shanksville, and there's nothing at Shanksville except this smoking hole. Now, there's some scattered debris, which is another subject. But as far as what the government said, there's nothing in that smoking hole. And I think the coroner left after about 20 minutes, so no bodies there. In fact, I'll even quote him, coroner, Somerset County coroner Wallace Miller, quote, this crash was different. There was no wreckage, no bodies, and no noise. And then I started looking at the Pentagon, and you know, you have Karen Katowski, U.S. Air Force retired Lieutenant Colonel, Ph.D., said, quote, there was a dearth of visible debris on the relatively unmarked Pentagon lawn where I stood only minutes after the impact. Beyond this strange absence of airliner debris, there was no sign of the kind of damage to the Pentagon structure one would expect from the impact of a large airliner. This visible evidence or lack thereof may also have been apparent to the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, who, in an unfortunate slip of the tongue, referred to the aircraft that slammed into the Pentagon as a missile, unquote, Lieutenant Colonel Katowski. And of course, some of your viewers will have seen the footage of April Gallup, who was in the Pentagon. She, when it exploded, she walked out with other Pentagon employees through that hole, that famous hole. And she said there were no bodies, no cushions, no luggage, no airplane parts anywhere. Of course, it penetrated three rings of the Pentagon, making this perfectly round hole. And the Pentagon can't produce any security cam footage except this one shot from a parking lot of something flashing by, which looks photoshopped. And Major General Albert Stubblebine, the former head of U.S. Army intelligence, said it was a missile. So I started looking at all this stuff, Freeman, and then I started revisiting the towers. And this is where we're going to go now, is what hit the towers. And it was not Flight 175. One way we know that is that on all footage taken from underneath the plane, you can see a three-dimensional object that looks just like a missile. It's the size of a cruise missile. It lights up when it comes into contact with a building or just the moment before it hits the building. And there's no way that you could attach a missile to the underside of Flight 175 at Logan Airport and then hope that the maintenance crew and the baggage handlers weren't going to notice this missile. And this is where my conversation with a pilot comes in. I asked for his opinion on Flight 175 and this missile. He said that it's standard procedure. Remember, this guy still actively flies A-300s, which are the Airbus equivalents of 767s, which is the plane we're talking about. And he said that every pilot or his co-pilot will do a walk around before the flight. There's no way they're not going to see a missile on there. So this could not have been Flight 175. That's number one. Number two, the penetration. The plane flies right into the building. Its aluminum wings and tail do not shear off as they would. This pilot said that is physically impossible. They're going through 14-inch steel columns. The plane does not even decelerate. This was a big win for him. It does not even slow down when it goes into the building. He said the nose would crumple. It did not. And he said this really did it for him. On some of the footage, you can see the nose come out on the other side. He calls it Pinocchio's nose. Now, some people have tried to say it's not the plane's nose. It's debris coming out the other side. No. If you take the stills, it is the perfect size and shape of the nose that goes into the plane, into the building. And also the left wing vanishes before it hits the building. And so what are we talking about? Some people thought there was a CGI after the fact, but Richard Hall, who's a very good 9/11 researcher, did a video where he actually made a 3D scale model of New York City. And he took the 26 best videos of 175, quote unquote, hitting the towers, and said they all follow the same trajectory. It's not CGI. Something hard did hit the towers, but it was not Flight 175. And he's concluded it was a cloaked missile. And that's what I agree with, a missile. This is something I didn't mention in terms of the impossibility of Flight 175 hitting the towers. And pilots for 9/11 Truth have done a lot of work on this. The controllability of a plane at 590 miles per hour, and that's the speed this object was going, a plane becomes uncontrollable. And there's no way that a novice pilot could do it, and not even the pilots who work for 9/11 Truth on simulators could do it. 590 miles an hour, you just can't hit the towers. You've got a very narrow margin of error. And, you know, if that plane had just clipped the tower with its wing, they never could have pulled 9/11 off. They never could have collapsed the towers based on a clip and having the plane crash somewhere else. So they had to guarantee in advance that the plane would hit, and there's no way they could do that. What this was a missile. A missile solves all their problems. A missile is fully controllable. They have thousands of experiences with hitting buildings with missiles, which they don't have with airplanes. A missile can be guided to a precise point. Many of these missiles have a camera right in the nose, and its nose is hardened for penetration, whereas the nose of a jetliner gets bashed in by bird collisions. There's just no way. And so what are we looking at? We're looking at, yes, a hologram. We are looking at a level of technology that people will say, oh, that's ridiculous. It doesn't exist. Wrong. The Air Force in the 1990s posted on their own websites pictures of what they called the airborne holographic projector, in which they demonstrated they were developing this technology of being able to project the image of an airplane, a military aircraft in this case, which would be a hologram, three-dimensional, in broad daylight. So if you think we're paranoid to say this, then you're saying the Air Force is paranoid. They had this technology in the 1990s. And the only other question would be, where would this missile come from? Well, there's a number of options. We don't know that for sure, but it gave me some chills up my spine when I saw that the Israelis, of course, attacked the USS Liberty and have attacked us many times, commissioned their first Dolphin-class submarines in 1999, which were capable of firing cruise missiles. And in the year 2000, the U.S. Navy observed them test-launching cruise missiles from their subs 1 year before 9/11. So you put this all together, I don't know for sure the Israelis launched these subs. I believe that they launched these missiles. I believe they probably did. But this is the David Copperfield technology we're talking about. It is real, and I believe is the best explanation. And this pilot, this active A-300 Airbus pilot, who I call Pilot A in my article to protect his identity, also believes it was smoke and mirrors and a mirage and a hologram.
Well, James, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind, which is odd, but you'll understand, was the Norway spiral. And people might not realize or remember, because they didn't follow it as closely as I did, but on the Norway spiral, we had a Russian sub in the White Seas right there near Norway, which launched an ICBM out of their submarine and then claimed they didn't, and then claimed they did, and then claimed that they had nothing to do with the Norway spiral. Now, that was some weird, weird stuff going on there with putting these particles up in the atmosphere right over an ionospheric heater like ISCAT, which is what was there. And it just happened to be the moment Barack Obama was in Norway receiving his Nobel Peace Prize. Now, here's our president receiving a Nobel Peace Prize while Russia is launching a nuclear-capable ICBM over his head, and then it's exploding into this strange formation of a blue spiral that seemed to be aluminum oxide putting in up in the atmosphere that is over an ionospheric heater. So you can take one look at the Norway spiral and look at my numerous articles about, or the numerous examples I've gathered about these tests of these missiles like this, then you can see that this is a common occurrence, and that submarines, I mean, we have the Astute class submarines out there now that are the biggest submarines the world has ever seen. And just, you know, this is completely possible is what I'm saying. And it gets as weird as a Norway spiral.
Right. And one thing I want to commend you for, Freeman, is that you do a lot of investigation into things that other alt-media people don't do. I always learn new things from you. I've learned two or three new things on our show tonight already. So I want to thank you for going where nobody else goes. And, you know, sometimes you'll say something, and I say, you know, I follow my Twitter feed pretty actively. I've never even heard that mentioned. So I want to commend you for doing that. And by the way, one thing I didn't mention in terms of Israeli capabilities is that, and I cite this in my work, in 1987, or there was a declassified later than 1987, there was a 1987 Defense Department paper called Critical Technology Assessment in Israel, noted that the Israeli firm El-Op was developing holographic technology with, quote, stealth applications, unquote. So that's 14 years before 9/11. So I can't point the finger and say that this missile definitely came from an Israeli sub, but given the dancing Israelis and the entire Israeli connection and their previous attacks on our soil, I don't think that an American military crew would fire a missile at the Pentagon or the World Trade Center. I think the Israelis would. I'm not sure of that, but the technology, to be sure, did exist, And I think that in terms of controllability, accuracy, and penetration, a missile is the best explanation for what happened at the Pentagon Shanksville with an aborted mission in the World Trade Center.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have Tupac as a hologram out there and high definition projection going on buildings to recreate.
Yes.
You know, we get to see this at things like Atlantis, Dubai, you know, and I remember Hollow Man from when I was a child. This was a big deal at the planetarium where they would make a man appear and disappear. And this was when I was like 10 years old. So, folks, that's like 1977 holographic technologies. So, yeah, we're way ahead. And I've seen that article you were talking about. Okay, so, I mean, with the military projection, you know, they're showing the B-2 bomber and how they could put one here, one there, and who knows which one's the right one. So definitely when we're looking at the video footage analyzed and put together, we can see what is impossible. And that is that a plane goes fully through a steel structure building and the nose cone comes out the other side. And we can see that and know that that's just impossible.
Right. And by the way, Freeman, this also, I think, and not even would agree, probably puts to rest the drone hypothesis, because, you know, people have rightfully pointed out that there was this Operation Northwoods in 1962 with the Joint Chiefs of Staff proposed substituting a drone for a commercial aircraft in order to stage a false flag on Cuba. And it picked up on that and said that they probably substituted drones, say, from Stewart Air Force Base. I think that's a pretty logical and intelligent conclusion, but the problem is that a drone's wings and tail can't fly through steel and concrete any better than a regular plane's, you know, 767-sized drone would meet the same G-forces, and lack of controllability, and its nose could not penetrate to the other side. So I think we're definitely talking a missile here with a holographic cloak.
Now, of course, there was one other theory, and that was the idea of remotely controlling the jets and taking over. And we could see examples of this, like we covered Egyptian Flight 990 last time we talked. That definitely seemed like a virtual takeover where the pilot was able to regain control, but then lost to what seemed to be the virtual control. And we also analyzed the fact that this was pre-9/11 when Egyptian Flight 990 went down. And so it was classified as pilot suicide. And even though he said a Muslim prayer as his plane crashed into the ocean, you heard nothing about terrorism in that event. Egyptian Flight 990 was classified as pilot suicide. And of course, pre-9/11, pre-programming for this situation. But the idea of remotely controlling these planes, did you talk about that?
Yes, and let's do that. There's one thing I do want to touch on first, though, just very briefly.
Okay.
Because it's a big hang-up for a lot of people, and that is the in terms of whether or not an aircraft hit the Twin Towers, is the airliner debris. And I've been contacted by two people who I respect very greatly in the truth movement, who told me they'd become convinced that the Twin Towers were hit by the original planes because of the aircraft debris. And so I found that troubling as well. Could you really plant aircraft debris? So I put the question to Pilot A and got his opinion. And the first thing I want to mention is that, first of all, there was definitely pre-planting and post-planting of certain small evidence, for example, the Koran at the strip club and the Koran in the car and Muhammad Atta's luggage that didn't make it onto Flight 11 that had the names of all the hijackers in it. And then after the fact, you had the unburned hijacker pilot. Never mind that no toilet or filing cabinet or piece of furniture could survive that blast in the World Trade Center. A hijacker passport could. And, of course, there were the red headbands that they found at Shanksville. So there was small debris planted before and after, but could they plant large debris? And what the pilot told me was that, number one, and he sent me a Pilots for 9/11 Truth video that backs this up. The total amount of airline debris is very small, couldn't fit into a truck. And the other thing, and this is really important, is that every piece of an airliner's got a serial number on it. Now, for example, they said they found a piece of landing gear, which strangely enough had a rope attached to it. And of course, landing gears don't come with a rope attached.
You would think the pilot would notice that.
Yeah. If in fact this was the landing gear from Flight 11 or Flight 175, all they have to do is take the serial number. It's a unique serial number assigned to one aircraft, and they could easily debunk the whole 9/11 truth movement, what we're saying about this, by simply showing the logbooks that demonstrate that the serial number indeed matches Flight 11 or Flight 175. They have never done that. The National Transportation Safety Board has never dared to come out and match any part to its source aircraft.
And I don't remember the exact flight. It may have been like TWA-800. It crashed into the ocean, and there was so much effort to go and get all the parts and pieces of this plane and bring them in a hangar and reassemble. I remember watching that.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
They worked on that forever.
Exactly. And in that case, I think it obviously was TWA-800, so there was no need to cover up. But I also asked the pilot A, I said, well, where would they get parts for debris? And he said, that's easy. He says, I'll quote him, he says, quote, when aircraft are retired, they're either scrapped or sometimes sold and flown to both civilian and military airfields to be used for experimentation or training or tourist attractions. He says, when I was growing up before 9/11, there was an old B-747 at a place called, I won't mention the name of the place, but he said it would be very easy to procure parts for an old Boeing for a future event. He says, what I want to see is the maintenance log showing the paper trail for these parts littered around the WTC, because all parts, including landing gear, have a paper trail. And one thing I should also mention in conjunction with this is, and I've got the New York Fire Department and Police Department tapes of this. If you know, the Dancing Israelis, it's interesting. They work for a moving company. And what's a moving company got? You know, it's Urban Moving Systems. A moving company has got large trucks. It's got dollies, and it's got strong guys. So if you wanted to plant some debris during the confusion of 9/11, it wouldn't be that hard. The mural truck, which is a famous piece of evidence, was found by the police at 11:30. We have
I gotta throw in there, James, like that to me, although I know it happened, the mural truck just seems so odd. I mean, that's like a magician bringing the answer to his trick out before showing you the trick. I mean, to me, that's just really bizarre behavior to have a truck with a mural of a plane exploding into New York City, driving around New York City on 9/11. I mean, what? Why? Why would anyone even do that? Isn't that bizarre?
That is really bizarre. But we do have the fire department and New York City police tapes, and you can listen to them live. And yeah, they describe the mural van. They say they've got two men fled the truck, and the truck exploded. They sent the bomb squad down. They had the two men under arrest. Of course, these must have been part of the Israelis that Michael Chertoff had sent home. I don't know why they'd be so brazen. But
isn't
maybe
that
they just think
behavior?
The goyim are so stupid that they won't pick up on this. I really don't know.
Why even do it? You know, just like the lone gunman when you saw that. Why even do that, right? Like we're saying, people are saying that was pre-projection so that it would get into the minds of the public. But it was so exact, you know. It's like, examples like that just make me think these guys are off their rocker.
Well, you're right about the lone gunman, and you were the one who called that to my attention. So I tweeted it out, and I think that, again, it's an example, Freeman, of things you spotted that a lot of other people haven't. But that episode of The Lone Gunman, it was the pilot episode. It aired on March the 4th, 2001, and it was about a aircraft being remotely hijacked, and they're going to fly it into the World Trade Center. The World Trade Center of all places, right? Yeah. And the heroes of the lone gunman, they're able to undo the remote hijacks and save the plane and, you know, have a happy ending for that particular episode of this show. But that's certainly an example of mind programming from Hollywood.
I'm going to throw in one more because we're reaching the end of this hour. Die Hard. I think it was Die Hard 2 or possibly 3. The whole synopsis was that they were going to have a terrorist event in this building. I think it was more bombs in the building than planes hitting it. But the whole purpose wasn't actually a terrorist attack. It was a gold theft. So in the basement of this building was all the gold. And so as the terrorist attack is happening to the building, explosions going off, the people in the basement are quickly loading dump trucks full of gold and rushing them through the subterranean chambers of the sewage system. Now, all I got to say is Dick Cheney was running those trucks on 9/11, and they did go straight into the sewage system. And how many millions of dollars or trillions or billions were missing in gold at the basement? There was another Die Hard gave that whole scenario.
Well, wouldn't you know it, I did see with my wife Die Hard 1. And then Die Hard 2 and 3, I think I watched the first minutes and it just seemed to bore me a little bit. You know, I've gotten to dislike Hollywood movies more and more. I should have stuck with that particular one you're talking about, though, because it obviously does have some interesting hints about 9/11. And so many of these films, you know, whether we're talking about The Simpsons or The Matrix, where Nemo's passport expires on September 11th, 2001, even though the movie was made, what, in 97? There's so many hints that they drop about these things that you could probably reconstruct the entire 9/11 event if you put enough movies together. You could probably patch together the entire 9/11 scenario. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's pretty amazing. One more thing I've learned from you, Freeman. I didn't finish the movie, so I just found that out now.
Right. You know, we assume that they put it there. I always want to make that clear because we're presented ad preference A or B, and so we read into a lot of things. I see that happen in this community quite a bit. When we can find the evidence that fits our belief bias, then we tend to, you know, fill it in there. I'm not so certain that 9/11 on Neo's passport, for an example, was even in reference to the Twin Tower event. And I have reasons for thinking that. So my belief bias shows that we're dealing with magicians that deal with magical numbers. And maybe this is the reason they would be brazen enough to drive a semi around around New York City with the exact depiction of what's going to happen on the truck, because it is a spiritual war that has to deal with the idea that you give your own free will agreement to this scenario. So take it from there, James, because we're going to wrap up right here in about 3 minutes. And let's get a little spiritual in this, because they want us to fulfill this plan. And these acts of prestidigitation are there to force us into solution A or solution B, never giving us even the opportunity to think of something way outside of the box, like, hey, just don't play. You know, I think they got that one right in the movie War Games, right? So let's wrap this first hour up with a little bit of our own spiritual know-how of realizing that we are dealing with dark sorcerers here that are using stage magic to lead us into a hell.
Well, it was David J. Dionisi is an author. He I first found out about him through a book he wrote on Hiroshima and especially Nagasaki, which was Japan's Christian center, and he talked about why it was targeted. And he talked about Nagasaki and Hiroshima as actually being burnt offerings to Satan. You know, those atomic bombs were not necessary. Japan was already suing to surrender on the very terms we accepted after the bombs were dropped, so the bombs were completely unnecessary. But he wrote another book about the spiritual dimensions of 9/11, and he pointed out that the destruction of the buildings and the thousands of lives lost were like a burnt offering to Satan. And it's interesting that there was, talking about spiritual aspects, the only structure that was not part of the World Trade Center that was completely destroyed by the 9/11 event was the was a Greek Orthodox Church, and the Orthodox Church representing the most stable and I would say most authentic form of Christianity that has not changed over the years. Whereas on the other hand, there was this Trinity Church, right, which is the church where George Washington Freemason was sworn in as president, and it was right there at the World Trade Center, and it wasn't even touched. They say not even one pane of glass was broken. So it seemed to be almost a spiritual dichotomy there going on with those two churches. But definitely 9/11, you know, going back to the days of Moloch, when they would sacrifice children as a burnt offering to Moloch, the satanic god, it seems like we're seeing more of these. Dresden, I think, was another example, but certainly 9/11, a burnt offering. And, you know, I haven't really thought about that mural truck and how it plays into this, but maybe it's a little similar to Hollywood, given in this case the hint wasn't on a Hollywood film, but it was on the side of a truck, in your face. This is what we're doing to you.
Yeah, let's think about David Blaine for a minute. When he sets up a scenario, and he is reputedly, you can watch him on television, convince people by planting subconscious triggers in them beforehand, and he actually leads these people through triggers to rob an armored vehicle. And you can believe it, it's Hollywood or not, but we know that this science is there. Of this type of pre-projection into your mind, and then you being triggered by such a thing. So there could have been subtle clues inside of that that then would trigger a response in people. Because, I mean, go check out David Blaine, folks, and watch what happens. This all wraps up in remote viewing and everything else. It all ties together. And you made me think of St. John's Cathedral, which really is a bizarre cathedral, folks. And I'm putting pictures of it up on my Flickr feed, and you'll be seeing these in my Instagram. So you definitely want to follow me on Flickr and Instagram if you want to look at a lot of these secret places. But the St. John's Cathedral there in New York has the most bizarre columns out there. And I have all the images there for you to look at of Kabbalah in the architecture of this St. John's Cathedral. And they have really bizarre Halloween spectaculars there, really bizarre stuff. You'll find that in the weird video section on freemantv.com. But they're in there. They took the steel from the Twin Towers. And you can see the picture for yourself, folks. They made an upside down cross out of the steel from the Twin Towers. And this is the official memorial inside of the St. John's Cathedral for 9/11. It's an upside-down cross made out of that metal. It's insane. You can go see it for yourself, folks. Follow me on Flickr. Follow me on Instagram. And, of course, they're all right there in my Twitter feed on freemantv.com, right there on the right-hand side of the page if you want to check it out. Wow, James, what a wild ride we're looking at, man. It's so hard to know if we're looking at a technical, you know, technocracy, a sorcery, or all of these things combined. But it definitely looks like we are being guided down the darkest path possible. And I have found that nothing brings people together like a good catastrophe, as horrible as that is. We can see it again and again, from Katrina to now Harvey and what's going to occur with Irma this weekend, that, you know, humans want to be kind. We want to pull together. We bond. We grab our boats and head to Houston to save lives. That's what humanity is about. So all of these shenanigans are absolutely not human. Or inhumane, you know?
That's because Lucifer is really at the top of this whole structure. And, you know, we tend to think about as being bankers who are just interested in wanting more money and power. But the money and power are simply the toys that they give these bankers to comply with their Luciferian agenda.
Absolutely. Absolutely, folks. So we're going to keep digging into this, man. I got some great people coming your way, folks. We're going to keep digging deeper and deeper into the magical realms, into the scientific realms, into the technological technocracy, up to the singularity, and off into space and beyond, because that's where this show goes. And you're going to find your deepest, darkest resources here. I mean, I have definitely covered and dove deep into the occult, and I think that you can get a much better picture of that here on freemantv.com than anywhere else. I've definitely interviewed my share of black magicians, that's for sure, James. But it's such a wonderful time to talk with someone as spiritually light as you and as dedicated to just digging in, and the fact that you're jumping out there and contacting these pilots and really trying to find answers that are logical, rational, and meet all the evidence it needs to find this answer, because we are going to be challenged here very near in the near future as to whether we think America should remain America or if it should become part of this conglomeration of Lucifer.
I think you're absolutely right. And what we're doing in the truth movement is spiritual in itself, in that God's nature is part of his nature, besides love is truth. And so the more we bring the truth to light, the closer we are to God, and the more we actually work against the Luciferian direction of the New World Order.
Thank you so much. So it's jamesperloff.com. Of course, the link right there for you, right below. And check out all of James's work. He's been at this for a while, does his own publishing. Do you have things coming up, James, and any products that you want to suggest to our listening audience?
Mostly I'm most active with my blog, jamesperloff.com, because I have several books out there. My most recent one is called Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which is a primer on the New World Order.
And we had a great show on that.
Yeah.
And just letting folks know.
Yeah. And I also scripted the movie Shattering, which has a lot of people from the truth movement. That's another primer on the New World Order. And I'm on Twitter as James Perloff. But I have been thinking, and this is just a maybe, but I'm thinking of putting these posts on 9/11 into a book to try to draw them all together, because as this has proceeded forward with more information coming from more professionals, a clearer and clearer picture of 9/11, at least for me, has been taking shape. And it might be nice to get a small book out there that would summarize everything in an up-to-date way.
I would suggest writing it as fiction. That's the way you're going to reach this public.
A lot of people have taken that advice, sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, nothing on this planet has changed the world more than literature, folks. No doubt whatsoever. The written word has altered life on planet Earth far more than bombs.
Well, you know, even the enemy knows that, and that's why they often put their messages, instead of into dry documentaries, they put them into emotional, jarring, fictional, quote-unquote, fictional films. Because they know that it appeals to the emotions, and quite often appealing to people's emotions, it can be more effective in cases than appealing to their intellects.
There you go. Well, folks, we're going to take a little pause here, and I want to suggest that you guys come on over to freemantv.com and subscribe, because as you all should know by now, if you're listening to anyone on the alternative, we're all getting cut out of the puzzle right now. Right. And, you know, we need your support more than ever. I'm certainly not going to make it on YouTube anymore, and you know, this is it for me. So it's now time for audience participation. So please share and subscribe so that we can keep this going and keep battling this Luciferian project, because we can find the way out of this. We will find option C, and we will all know that it is there for our taking. So thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will see you all next week.